And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this nice, cool Saturday morning. It feels good outside. I looked for the article. I could not find it, but I'm almost positive this is what it said. There is a particular study where they were only looking at individuals that were age 75 and above. So we're not picking on people today that are 75 and above, but it's very interesting. Because what they found was those that had the most dangerous form of cholesterol, sometimes they call it LDL type C. And I don't think I need to go into all that, but it's considered a bad form of cholesterol. But there's irony here. Because if you're 75 and you have more of this LDL-C, which is the bad form of cholesterol, then you live longer than anybody else on the planet that's age 75 without it. Okay, I might have said that loosely. You're listening to Health Essentials. Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Morgan. It's good to be here today. This, to me, is very fascinating. I really enjoy observing people and taking a look at people. And the one thing that that just keeps coming back over and over and over again is the idea of infections. Sometimes you're nervous to go visit a loved one in the hospital because you think if you go in there, you might pick up a staph infection. A buddy of mine told me about a man that everybody in Jacksonville knows and loves by the name of Stacy that supposedly had a surgery. The problem was they left a sponge inside of him, and then supposedly he developed sepsis a bad infection because of that. Some of the worst bacteria on earth right now that they're saying is resistant to antibiotics are things like Enterococcus. You don't want that. Pseudomonas. You don't want that. Staph, E. coli, strep. But what I thought I'd tell you today, just briefly, to me, I'm very, very intrigued by this idea. So let's just say you have an infection on your finger or on your legs, or you have these boils in your armpit. That was one of the great moments of my life when I was 5 years old watching my father have a boil lanced. It looked very painful. But, sometimes things like that have to be done. But there's a form of cholesterol that doctors are almost always calling the good form of cholesterol, called the HDL cholesterol. So when you go to a doctor and you say, let's do a lipid profile, under normal circumstances, they're going to measure total cholesterol. I think you and I could probably debate what a healthy level would be. Then they measure what's called LDL cholesterol. Then there's a form called HDL. That's the one that I want to speak of just briefly this morning. Then you usually have what are called triglycerides. And there's a form that I'm very thankful that I see more and more on routine lab tests. It's called VLDL. And that just stands for very low density lipoprotein. Normally on a blood test, that range is going to go somewhere between 0, maybe upwards to 30 or so, depending on the lab. But I like reading Dr. Linus Pauling's work, and he would always say that when your VLDL cholesterol is 21 or above, then what's happening is you're kind of forming plaque in your arteries at a faster rate than what you can pick up and remove. Does that make sense? And so now, when they study 10-year-old kids, they're already finding that their arteries are filled with these fatty streaks. And these fatty streaks are where you may have plaque buildup down the road. Almost everybody, by the time they're 40, they have these fatty streaks. Anyway, back to HDL cholesterol. I will tell you the punchline, though. If your VLDL cholesterol is 21 or above, then I think that's a pretty good clue that you might have a process on the inside of your body that's not going to turn out so great. And you know what counters that? Vitamin C does. Yeah, vitamin C. You may not know this, but human beings, we lack the gene or the ability to manufacture it, so we have to get it from the food that we eat. And one of the articles I was looking at before I came on the air this morning, it looked at mice. There are mice that have the gene that allows them to make vitamin C. Okay? And there are also mice, and I'm sure they're genetically modified or bred, or I don't know, maybe they just occur naturally, but there's some mice that lack the gene to manufacture vitamin C. And so on this chart, I started studying it just slightly, and it said mice that make vitamin C live 2.7 times longer. So let's just say that a normal mouse or mice live an average of a year. I know that's not true, but just for simplicity. Well, the mice that make vitamin C, they live 2.7 years in a lab compared to those that don't make it. It's very interesting. All right. Back to HDL cholesterol. That's known as high-density lipoprotein. Sometimes when I look at these lab tests, they'll show some a range, but a lot of times the labs, they want to cut it right off at 60, and they want to say anything 60 or above is proven to be too much HDL cholesterol. But I want to question that for just a moment. One of the studies, and I don't have it in front of me, please forgive me, but it demonstrated that when a person has plaque in their arteries, having an HDL cholesterol level at 60 or above, then your body starts scooping up the old cholesterol and carrying it back to the liver. I think I decided to take your phone call instead of talking about HDL cholesterol. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Dr. Morgan. I have a question about alpha-lipoic acid. I have some problems down in my feet with this, the nerves that are irritated. Someone suggested that alpha-lipoic acid.
Well, have you been to a doctor? Has he called it neuropathy?
Yes, I go to a podiatrist.
Well, if I'm not being too forward, what do you actually experience, or what do you feel? What's it feel like?
I feel like somebody's squeezing my feet all the time.
You mean like somebody's just manually grabbing your foot and squeezing it hard?
Yeah, no, not hard. It's just like if you were just messing with my foot, just squeezing it a little bit.
Oh, so there's no burning, there's no pain, it's just very annoying, right?
Right. This is not a diabetic situation. It's the nerves that go between those toes get irritated because the spaces for the nerves is not adequate.
Well, you don't have what's called a Morton's neuroma, do you?
No.
Okay. Sometimes those nerves can get trapped between those digits of the toes, and they can squeeze and put pressure like that. Anyway, Can I have a go with this?
Sure enough.
All right, good, thanks. One of the articles that I was reading this morning was just looking at the consumption of one substance, and it was connecting it with neuropathy. And I won't go into all the scientific data and all that good stuff, but guess which food was linked to the highest amount of nerve damage in the feet? I'll give you a choice. You could choose from fat or from protein or from sugar.
Well, I know sugar is a bad thing, so I'm going to go with sugar.
That's right. The other thing the article said, when they find, you know, evidence of a person that's lived about 3,000 years ago, sometimes they have hard, difficult time finding a person with cavities. And I kind of think to myself, they don't even have toothbrushes. They don't have water picks. They sure didn't have dentists back then. But how could they live that long without cavities? I'm thinking, well, they weren't drinking soda waters, and they probably weren't eating candy bars. Anyway, alpha-lipoic acid. I'm going to call it a sulfur-bound peptide. So I'm going to say it's a protein molecule that has a sulfur molecule with it. And this may be just slightly going off-center just a little bit, but maybe the most potent antioxidant that's made by the human body. I mean, alpha-lipoic acid's right up there, but have you ever heard of glutathione?
No, I have not.
Well, glutathione is a sulfur-bound molecule. I must say it's a close cousin of alpha-lipoic acid. But what these things do is they act as antioxidants. Or maybe another way of calling it, they're called electron donors. And so the article that I read the other day was talking about what happens to a human being when they have a heart attack. And this is a different take on it. You know, if you had severe chest pain, if you said it feels like there's an elephant sitting on my chest, I can't breathe. I've got pain going down my left arm. I'm breaking out in sweat. You probably need to be at the ER. But that would be what you'd have with a heart attack. But they show there's a vitamin that human beings need. It's called vitamin C. We really can't live without it. If you live without it, you develop a condition called scurvy. You start bruising easily. You bleed. Your joints start to fall to pieces, so they snap, crackle, and pop and rattle. But it's not good to have scurvy. But the point that I'm getting to, within about 12 hours of a person having a heart attack, what that does is it severely depletes the vitamin C level in the cardiac muscle. And the reason why this is so significant, it says if you just give it two or three more days, it will deplete the vitamin C reserves by another 50%. So what happens is when you have a heart attack, you get a lack of oxygen. And you may have heard the term before, free radicals. Free radicals are like damaged proteins and toxic substances, and what they do is they steal your energy from you, or they steal your electrons. Well, the reason that vitamin C is so wonderful, along with alpha-lipoic acid, is they act as antioxidants, or they help quench or squelch or soak up free radicals. So depending on how much vitamin C a human being has inside of them, or glutathione, or alpha-lipoic acid, it soaks up all the damaging debris so it can't damage your heart. And so there's been experiments where they take just intravenous vitamin C, and if you ask me, I wouldn't mind if they tried intravenous alpha-lipoic acid or glutathione. I think that's a great idea for medicine to do. But they show when they give intravenous vitamin C, oh my word, do they limit the damage to the heart muscle? My goodness, yes. Because I think at the end of the day, there's only two types of heart attacks. There's non-fatal and there's fatal. I don't want either one of them, do you?
No, sure not.
But going back to your feet for a second. What happens if you start supplementing your diet with extra vitamin C or glutathione or alpha-lipoic acid? What you do is you create the potential for your body to heal itself just a little bit faster, or maybe even a lot faster. And so the idea of taking alpha-lipoic acid, if it helps your body regenerate or regrow nerves or repair nerves at a faster rate, that's what gets away, that's what does away with the burning or the squeezing or the pain or the needles or the numbness, because you repair the nerves. And so that's kind of the equation we're looking at right here. And so I think it would be great to try alpha-lipoic acid, and it probably it's going to help you. The other point that I want to bring up, I just said earlier that I think alpha-lipoic acid is a sulfur-bound peptide, just a protein with the element sulfur. Well, I know this sounds kind of complicated, but one of the ways that we keep our blood clean and we keep our body in good working order is by the use of the element sulfur. And like I said earlier, the most potent, you know, chemical that your body makes to keep you free from disease is probably glutathione. I think I have a book that looks at every disease, and I can tell you this, every chronic debilitating disease, whether it's diabetes or heart disease or severe degenerative arthritis, maybe even some autoimmune diseases, chronic infections, obesity, you could say they're all glutathione deficiencies. That's one of the reasons why it's important to eat foods that are high in sulfur. Eggs have sulfur in them. Grass-fed beef has sulfur. I tend to think that seafood is an excellent source of sulfur. And so I was reading a study about which foods generate the most energy in the human body, and they were saying, A-plus was going to be seafood. So when people like to eat things like salmon, or they eat flounder or cod, boy, you're making a good choice because those are rich in sulfur. I even read the other day that aloe vera is high in sulfur, and that was new information to me. I like learning new stuff like that. And so here's another sales pitch for you. There have been so many studies on people that live in poor parts of the world where they can't even afford shoes. Sometimes they're hard-pressed to even get a sandal. Sometimes they have to make a sandal out of, you know, what they can find from scraps. And so we've got it really good here in America, don't we?
Sure do.
But they show when people practice walking barefoot on the dirt or the grass, if you can, they have twice as many blood vessels and twice as many nerves. And so if we were to count the number of arteries and veins that you have in the bottom of your feet right now, that's the part of your body you want to fix. And, of course, everything between there and your heart, too. What would happen if you start walking barefoot every single day? You would start enhancing new growth of arteries and veins in your feet. And I think if you listened to me last week, I said one of the greatest techniques of all time of getting rid of toenail fungus is just walking barefoot, because you increase circulation. Fungus does not like to live where there's a high amount of oxygen. And so, wouldn't that be kind of crazy if you started walking barefoot in your backyard to see if it would help your neuropathy go away?
Yes, it would be.
Now tell me again, just give me an approximate. What's your approximate age, if you don't mind telling me?
74.
How much longer?
74.
How much longer would you like to be productive on Earth?
Well,
Lord willing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having another 20 years.
If they were a good, high-quality 20 years?
Oh, yes, sure.
Now, that's free, what I just told you, walking barefoot. And I realize it might be a little bit cool this morning, but I think it's supposed to warm up. But what would happen? See, what I'd be curious about is, if you took your shoes and your socks off, and if you had a safe place to walk, I don't mean where there's broken glass or, you know, sharp rocks, something like that. Even if you had diabetes, I know that you could totally tolerate walking on soft grass. I almost stepped on a snake yesterday. I didn't, though. It was green, like the color of asparagus, and it had these little spots all over it. And because it was cool outside, it barely moved. Even when I touched it with my foot, it just barely slithered away. Probably because it was like about 52, 53 degrees.
Right.
But the day you start walking barefoot is the day you start sending these signals to start regrowing new arteries and veins and nerves. And plus, I can tell you this, if you walk barefoot in the grass a little bit every day, those intrinsic foot muscles, they will become stronger. Do you feel like you're pretty strong?
Oh, I do pretty good.
Well, what will happen is if you start walking barefoot, all those foot muscles will become stronger, and your body has no choice. It's going to be sending more blood to the feet. That's exactly
well, here's
what
you want. Sure. Now, the doctor that I went to see about this, he is having me fitted for a prosthesis inside my shoes that will help spread the spaces down there around my toes as I walk. So I was just thinking.
I'm not against any of that. If that works, man, that's super. But I tell you what, if you walk barefoot, you're going to start spreading all that open anyway.
Yeah,
and plus,
right.
And plus, you'll strengthen the feet muscles. You know, what I really should tell you is if you knew where there's some soft sand and you could walk in that, because that really spreads all those bones out. But if you regain the strength of your arch and your foot, I'm willing to bet anything that all that squeezing, annoying discomfort completely disappears and goes away.
That would be great, because they tried the drugs like gabapentin quite a bit of it, and it didn't make it go away.
I mean, did it just kind of diminish the symptoms a little bit?
It might have, yes.
But it didn't make you grow new blood vessels to your feet, did it?
No, it
well, you know, one thing.
I don't know what it was doing.
If I had that annoying sensation, one thing that you might try also is if you had just a pair of wool socks that you don't mind, you know, putting castor oil on or in, rub your feet down every evening with castor oil and just put those wool socks on at night. And hopefully they'll do a pretty good job of keeping the oil off the bedding or the sheets. But
castor oil and wool socks. Okay,
oh, yeah.
That's it. Very interesting.
Well, what happens is every time that you put castor oil on your foot, it increases circulation and blood flow. Now, I am not smart enough to know exactly how it does that, but it does it. And so I can't even tell you how many people I've seen. They have been completely cured of neuropathies and pain and problems just by the consistent, faithful application of castor oil. Now, one more thing that I thought of as we were talking. You don't mind if I give you a recommendation for a vitamin, do you?
No, I like everything you do.
Oh, good. Well, one of the things that you might want to look at is supplementing with two or three things. One of them might be the element magnesium. And I'm perfectly fine with you experimenting with how much magnesium you should take. Obviously, I'm not trying to cause you to have diarrhea or super loose stools. You know how, like, if somebody was going to have a colonoscopy, the doctor might say, go to Walmart or the pharmacy, pick up a bottle of magnesium citrate, drink it, clean everything out. So when I put my television camera or crew in there, I can see what's going on. But I'm not trying to give you magnesium citrate so it makes you have, multiple bowel movements and cleans you out. But you want to take just enough to where you have easy, good, well-formed bowel movements, but not so much magnesium where you have to run to the bathroom all the time with just, watery, loose stools.
Right.
But
well,
I think...
I'm taking some magnesium to deal with... In fact, it's working quite nicely. It stopped every one of my nighttime muscle cramping.
Business. Oh, it does? Good. Well, there's a bonus for you right there. Now, one of the nice things about magnesium, it increases oxygen to the toes. It's kind of hard to beat that.
That's pretty good.
But one of the vitamins that I want to sell you on, it's a fat-soluble vitamin called minoquinone. Sometimes it's called vitamin K2. It's a fat-soluble vitamin. I can't even tell you. I could probably go overboard, but I'm not trying to go overboard this morning. How much that has helped me when I'm trying to help people that have neuropathy. And like anything else, just like we talked about magnesium, there's going to be a Goldilocks just right or an optimal level, and there's going to be a level that's too low to kind of get over the hump. And, I don't know if you've read very much about vitamin D3 or vitamin C or magnesium, but there's always a level that you kind of want to get to. And if you get there, all the good things begin to happen when it comes to healing and repair. So I guess I would call that more of an optimal amount. And that study that I read on the mice, the ones that make vitamin C live 2.7 times longer than those that don't make vitamin C, well, that kind of caught my attention. So I looked over and I cross-referenced, and it said, what would the amount be for a human being that wants to just reproduce or recreate those mice that live longer? I realize humans aren't mice, but we're mammals. It's just information. I'd rather do experiments on mice than humans, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But they said somewhere around 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C would recreate, the amount of vitamin C in those mice that have the gene that allows them to make vitamin C. I'm kind of going in circles here, but vitamin C supports sulfation. It supports that sulfur molecule in the body. What keeps your blood from being too thick or too thin and your blood flowing at a good speed and being clean is sulfur. So when you say alpha-lipoic acid or I say glutathione, well, that's where sulfur foods come in handy. That's broccoli.
Before we get too far, I started writing down gluta. I got gluta. How do you think?
Glutathione. Let me spell it right here.
That's what I need, yes.
Okay, it's spelled G-L-U-T-A-T-H-I-O-N-E, glutathione.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And if I'm not mistaken, there's one particular food that is notorious for having generous amounts of glutathione in it. It begins with the letter A, and it's not an avocado. It's long, it's green, it takes 3 years for it to grow.
Asparagus.
You got it! But that has a good amount of glutathione in it.
Okay.
And I know this is a little bit, I probably shouldn't say this, but sometimes when a person has a problem with sulfur, what they may do is they may eat asparagus, and then when they go to the bathroom to urinate, they might notice, is that the smell of asparagus that I detect? Anyway. So, anyway, that's food for thought for you, right?
All right. Plenty of it. I appreciate that, Dr.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, speaking of the last caller right there, let me see what I can find out. Oh, yeah, this to me was very, very fascinating. I don't know if you know this or not, but there are some living organisms that are called parasites. They can actually digest fat and cholesterol. Well, to me, that's kind of fascinating. So there are different types of protozoas like Giardia. You don't want that infection. There's all manner of fungus or fungi. I don't even know that I could name half of them. I'm sure I had to learn that at some point in school, but since then... But you know what I mean when I refer to a fungus, don't you? And there are worms. Well, what they do is, well, we got a phone call here. Well, I'll come right back to this, okay? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
I didn't even give the phone number out, and you already did. You just magically
know? Well, that's because I have it saved in my phone.
Oh, okay, good.
And I took a chance when you hung up from the last caller, and you started on another topic, and I thought, well, maybe he doesn't have somebody.
No, I'm glad you called. I am.
Well, I tuned in a little bit late, and you were talking about castor oil increasing the blood flow wherever you put it.
Yes.
And I wanted to tell you and ask you about, I've had a little spot on my upper chest that I've always had just like a coloration there, like a mole, but it never, you know, you couldn't feel it.
It's just flat and level with the skin, right?
Yeah, but about 3 months ago, it started for the first time in my life, just having a feel to it, and then it kind of got a little bigger in terms of protruding from my chest. And I instantly, for some reason, thought, I'm going to, rather than going to the doctor and finding out it's some kind of skin cancer and getting all worried about it and what have you, I'm just going to start putting castor oil on it. And I did, and the thing about a week ago had started kind of drying up and
really
turning into a little scab like place, and is just really close to just falling off.
See, wouldn't that be amazing if that thing just completely was pushed out of the body? It flaked off, fell off, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's what it appears is happening.
I'm going to be just very frank with you. When you started telling me this story, I thought to myself, oh, please, Lord, I don't want this to be a melanoma or a skin cancer.
Right.
But I am going to tell you the truth. If this doesn't completely resolve itself perfectly, you need to go get that checked out.
Yeah, that I'm aware of. I just...
But that's very interesting, your story. I like it.
I wanted to hear your take on what I've done and whether I should continue. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with putting castor oil on it on a regular basis. And
I had a man come to see me not that long ago.
Right.
And he was, because of using chemotherapy, he didn't have any hair on the top of his head.
Right.
Very, very sweet man. But when you look at the skin on the top of his head, he had all these crusty, scaly, red inflamed lesions, almost like scabs everywhere, and they just wouldn't go away.
Right.
And I just kind of said this to him in passing, and this time I did not say castor oil. I said, at the very least, maybe we could try some coconut oil and just see what happens.
Right.
And I had no idea, but his wife, if I'm not mistaken, she rubbed castor oil on his head, all over his head, maybe 2 or 3 times a day, and in 1 month, his skin was perfectly clear. It looked like a baby's bottom. I mean,
well,
not like the bottom, but the skin covering the bottom.
Sure.
But, yeah, and it was so... And that really amazed me, because I didn't think it would work that fast. You see,
well,
how, you see how sometimes I can be biased?
I do.
Because I didn't, I had no expectation, but it just completely took care of every bit of those crusty... scabs,
well,
and lesions all over the covering of the head.
Right.
But castor oil is an amazing substance.
It really is.
I remember one time my daughter called me and she said, Dad, I've got the largest zit in the universe on my forehead. What can I do? And I said, well, take a Band-Aid, put the gauze or drench the gauze part of it with the castor oil and tape it on overnight. And in the morning, it was just about 100% gone. And that kind of amazed me, too, because I'm going, it can't happen that fast.
Well, another thing is I've just recently started job that I have to wear steel-toed shoes mm-hmm. or boots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time in my life that I've started developing a callus on the outside edge of my big toe on both feet.
Do the boots fit you well?
Not really well.
Okay.
No.
Well.
But I've started putting castor oil on those calluses, and I've just started that, so I don't know if that's going to help or not, but it made sense to me to do that.
Well, you've got nothing to lose. It's just castor oil.
That's true.
I mean, what can you do to hurt yourself?
Well,
now, I was going to recommend that you drink a quart of it for breakfast and see
right.
what happens.
Quart? I don't think so.
We might have a small disaster on our hands.
Yeah, I think I could predict what would happen, but I'm not going to go there.
Well, we don't have to prove it.
Sure. All right. Well, hey,
well, that's a great story. Thank you very much for your phone call.
Go ahead.
Thanks, buddy.
You bet.
Bye-bye. I haven't given out the phone number, and I should have. Sorry. The number is 903-586-5257. You're listening to Health Essentials. I'm Dr. Morgan. And what I was talking about, HDL cholesterol, to me this is very intriguing, but let me see if I can get to the gist of it. Where's that research right here? Okay. Just consider this for a second. One of the things this article or this research is referring to is what would be considered a healthy level of HDL cholesterol. And I don't want to be the type of physician that just instantly dismisses it because maybe I don't know anything about it. And, you know, I've done that before. I don't want to be that way. I want to be humble and open. But there's a certain level of HDL cholesterol that's going to be in your best interest. And so I want to tell you what that is. Well, after looking at multiple studies, you almost always find it somewhere between 60 and 70. But 70 is considered by most of the greatest experts. That wasn't good English. That's just a perfect amount. So anything less than that. But one of the main jobs, and this is what I was getting to, HDL cholesterol is very famous for clearing toxins from the body. God designed it. It has a purpose. But you need HDL cholesterol in order to clear toxic waste and debris from your body. So I think you can do the math on this. If the number 70 is a great number, what do you do if your number is 35? I just said that because that's half of 70. Well, it may be that there's toxins and debris and infections that just don't get cleared and removed from the body. And so there was one study that I came across, and it showed in individuals that had optimal levels of HDL cholesterol, well, they had the least infections of all time, and they had the least inflammation. Maybe another way of saying this is, you have 10 people that live under one roof. Maybe 7 of them are children. There might be a mother-in-law, a husband, a wife, something like that. I'm just making up the number 10 for simplicity. But as it works out, everybody gets a cold. Or what I should say is, 7 get a cold, 3 don't get a cold. Maybe those 3 people, maybe their immune system is a little bit more vigorous, and it can clear the viruses faster. That happens all the time. Some people are just stronger. I'm referring to the immune system. But out of those 7 people that got the cold, what if it hits 3 of them really, really hard, and they're sick for 2 weeks, but 4 of them, they just get down a little bit for about a day or two, and they're in bed for a day, but then they get up and get going again. Well, they've shown that HDL cholesterol is a pretty good predictor on who's going to have the roughest go when they get a cold or they get an infection. And so the lower the HDL cholesterol, the more inflammation you're going to have. And that just means basically you're going to ache and hurt and feel miserable when your HDL cholesterol is low, which is interesting. There are studies that show that the more statins you take, the longer it takes to overcome infections or even cancer. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Did you get your radio off yet?
No, I turned it off. Okay.
Thank you very much. Good morning. How are you, ma'am?
Fine, thank you. You had mentioned about the importance of vitamin C, and I wondered if you could comment on ascorbic acid as a legitimate source of vitamin C, or if another is considerably better, another form.
I don't want to be ultra nitpicky, but vitamin C is like the wrapper around, vitamin C contains a wrapper around it that's called ascorbic acid.
Yes.
And to the best of my knowledge, the way that ascorbic acid is manufactured is they take what's called high fructose corn syrup and they react it with what's called sulfuric acid. And so they can just gently bend that bond and bam, you've got ascorbic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can make it from sugar. But the other thing that I would say just very simply, the more sugar or starches, grains, high starch foods that people eat, the
mm-hmm.
more vitamin C their body has to, they have to have just to keep their body in good working order.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of mentioned earlier on the radio this morning when they find a skull that's, they think, 6,000 years old and it's well preserved, they're kind of astonished to say, we didn't find a toothbrush or toothpaste near the body
mm-hmm.
because they have all their teeth and they're intact. There's no cavities. But then again, mm-hmm. people weren't eating Snickers back then or Milky Ways. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
ascorbic acid. I just want you to know I'm open-minded, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But ascorbic acid, it's not the same as what's called whole food vitamin C. So, for example, if you go to New Zealand later today and you say, I'd like to eat a couple of kiwis, I'm telling you, kiwis are like great sources of vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they may not be a megadose. So if you grabbed a packet of Emergen-C and it said it contained 1,000 milligrams,
mm-hmm.
A kiwi is nowhere close to that. What does it have? Like maybe 60 to maybe 75, depending on the quality of the fruit?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a form of vitamin C that's called whole vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when you look at the label of the vitamin or the vitamin supplement, you know how when you go to the grocery store and they have a packaged food and they have the list of ingredients?
Mm-hmm.
If the number one ingredient, if the first ingredient listed is water, then you know, hey, this is mainly water. Well, what if the second ingredient is lemon juice? Well, you can say, okay, the next most abundant is lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
But then you might look, number three is ascorbic acid. So you, at least you know what it's made of. But whole food vitamin C, when you look at a vitamin supplement and you kind of flip it around to look at the ingredients, they're probably going to mention something like camu is a source,
mm-hmm.
or rose hips.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they'll use what's called buckwheat.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, that's not right. Buckwheat. I'm just going to say extract. Sorry, I lost it. But it may say something like it comes completely 100% from oranges,
mm-hmm.
or for lemons or limes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they usually, to preserve that and keep it fresh or to keep it potent, they usually pack a bunch of stuff, other stuff with it, like broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower,
mm-hmm.
to keep it fresh. But you can get whole vitamin C. But it's very doubtful you're going to walk in the store and find a 1,000 milligram tablet or capsule. I just haven't seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not against vitamin C. Just like I mentioned earlier, if they took ascorbic acid and they started running an intravenous infusion of vitamin C when somebody comes in with a heart attack,
yes.
The studies are incredible on that, how it decreases the damage. That means you recover faster, you get over it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if I was a doctor in charge and you were having a mild heart attack, if I said, ma'am, this is not the standard of care, but do you mind if I give you a vitamin C infusion to protect you and help you recover? What would you
mm-hmm.
what would you say to that?
Yes.
And then I would say, but if I do that, you'll be out of the hospital in one day instead of 8 days. No, I'm joking
mm-hmm.
about that. No, but you can get whole food vitamin C, and I do think that is a superior product. But for everyone that's listening, I would rather you take ascorbic acid than nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
I really would.
You mentioned taking at least 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C a day. Can you get that in a food source without a supplement?
Yes, you can. But like I said, that's going to be, what, 20 kiwis a day?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be ridiculous here. So there's kind of a point where you're going, 20 kiwis. I wonder if I have room for any other food besides that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is so helpful.
Well, and you know the point that I made earlier? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think this has to be like a really deep conversation, but the more grain and the more mm-hmm. starch and the more mm-hmm. sugar that somebody consumes, the more they burn through their vitamin C. So can you figure out what I'm really saying? The less sugar a person consumes, mm-hmm. they can get by and do really well with less vitamin C. That's one of the reasons why when they studied, I'm trying to think of his name. Was his name Admiral Perry, the guy that discovered the North Pole?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. If I get his name wrong, forgive me. But anyway, all his men were dying of scurvy or coming down with scurvy, which made him. I don't know how you can be really encouraged, marching across the tundra looking for the North Pole when you feel like you're about to die and you're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like, just leave me here. I'd rather die than take one more step. But mm-hmm. that's scurvy. But mm-hmm. but the Eskimos that were with him, they had no scurvy, and they were on a 100% meat diet. They had no vegetables. They had no blueberries or kiwi fruits or oranges or lemons or limes.
Mm-hmm.
But that just goes to show you that sometimes when you eat a traditional diet like the Eskimos, you don't mm-hmm. even require. I know that's a bizarre thing for me to say,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
when you live off whale blubber and seal and fish and maybe caribou, your need for vitamin C is just greatly diminished. But then again, the more sugar that a person consumes, the more free radicals and the more damage takes place with the body.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say it's not fun to eat sugar, because it is, isn't it?
Yes. What about sodium ascorbate, the baking soda with a vitamin C?
That's not sodium ascorbate. That's sodium bicarbonate.
Oh, that's right.
But to answer your question, you can get a form of vitamin C called sodium ascorbate, if that's what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I could have misinterpreted that. So you can get a buffered form of vitamin C, and that would be an ascorbate.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
is that
helpful or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, it can be. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But not as good as whole food vitamin C.
Well, you know what? Can you tell by listening to my voice? I'm kind of backtracking just a little bit. Because all these studies that I've read, I don't want to just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
That there's an antibiotic called, it begins with a D. Is it called rats. I hate it when I can't recall something like this. It's so simple. Doxycycline.
Something like that.
I'm only getting tickled to myself. It's doxycycline. But that Italian researcher, it showed when people get a diagnosis of cancer, and I'm just going to make up one. I'm going to call it ovarian cancer, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If a doctor gives standard drugs that are used, that's called chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is the chemotherapy does not kill what are called the parent stem cells of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the chemotherapy goes in the woman's body, those apparent stem cells of the cancer, they just kind of go into a deep sleep or they go into hiding, and so they're kind of safe from the cancer. So you could do a chemotherapy. They could do a test and say, ma'am, we have good news. We detect no cancer whatsoever, only within 3 months to have the cancer come back with a vengeance. So you know that maybe the way they're interpreting this is not right. But they've shown if all they do is give vitamin C with doxycycline,
mm-hmm.
which is an antibiotic, that kills the cancer stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, this every oncologist in Tyler or Longview or Jacksonville, Palestine, anywhere in between, Dallas-Fort Worth, they need to read studies like that, because obviously we have a duty to give the very best options to people. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you told me that we could do something like that that involved vitamin C, I think I'd be leaning in that direction,
mm-hmm.
maybe instead of a drug that might destroy me.
Mm-hmm. That is so helpful. And thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Thank you for your phone call. I hope I helped you today.
This was very, very helpful.
Good. Well, you have a good day, and I appreciate your call. May God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I appreciate that very much. So here's a study right here on the HDL cholesterol. People with high levels of HDL cholesterol, they're only one-sixth as likely to develop pneumonia. I don't know if you know what this means, but when an older person goes to the hospital with pneumonia, they're usually a goner. That's only 1/6 as likely. Very interesting. So it'd be good to have HDL between 60 and 70, wouldn't it? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Doctor, I just got a letter from my doctor. He wants me to go in for a biopsy. I have a lump on my thyroid He said it measures like 3 inches. Three quarters of an inch on my thyroid. And I'm just wondering. He wants me to have it to rule out cancer of the thyroid.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, that is the number one overdiagnosis of all time. Even they're trying to walk this whole thing back on thyroid cancer, because when those cells become a little bit abnormal, they swell, but it's not cancer. But it's extremely common for a nodule or a cyst to form on the thyroid. And you may think I'm a morbid person, but I actually like reading those cadaver studies on what they find among groups of people. But if you're the age 50 and above, there's like a 50-50 chance that you could have a cyst or nodule on your thyroid. They just occur frequently in the world that we live in. But I think the reason why is just we're not living in the Garden of Eden. We're exposed to so much toxic debris. And one of the biggest players of all time is fluoride or fluorine.
Okay.
So ask me if I like using cast iron cookware versus non-stick fluoridated cookware.
Cast iron, I hear it's good.
Oh, totally. There was a study years ago, and they said the number one correlation to women, I know you're not a woman, but just hear me out here. They showed that when women use non-stick cookware, you know, to cook their food, or plasticware, it has the highest correlation developing thyroid problems of all time.
Okay.
And so fluoride tends to mess up the thyroid, is what I'm saying.
Right, okay.
But I want this to be just a benign nodule that we can get to disappear and go away.
Okay, should I go in and, I don't know, should I go in and let him biopsy this thing, or another way I can do it?
I think you should do it.
Okay.
You got to go into it with an open mind. Let them take just a small needle biopsy, hopefully. And hopefully it proves it's just benign tissue, and God's looked upon you with favor and mercy, and we can kind of resolve it and get it to reabsorb and take care of itself. Now, this is just me. I'm not saying this to take the place of any medical treatment at all, but there's a lot of people that I've seen over the years that we had nodules and cysts disappear in the body just by the use of what's called calcium bentonite clay.
Okay.
You ever heard of that?
Yes, sir. This stuff, I think my mom used to do that, because Clater and Hills used to eat that stuff a lot when she was a kid.
Yes, she did. She walked barefoot down to the creek and dug it out of the side of the bed and ate it.
Yes.
Where did your mom grow up?
Tatum, in the Tatum area.
Is that where she got the clay?
Yes.
Where'd she get it from? Like just on the side of a creek or something?
Yeah.
You know what? I know I'm wasting your time, but can I tell you a story I read this morning?
Okay.
There's this national park in Africa. I forgot the name of it, like Elagon or something like that. They found this cave in the side of a mountain that goes 700 foot deep, but the cave is huge. It's so huge, it's big enough for an elephant to live in. Or an elephant could go all the way. It's 700 foot deep. And you know what the elephants are after? They're after salt.
Okay.
And so they have taken their tusk and their feet, and they have bored 700 feet into the side of this mountain just so they can keep scraping and getting salt. Now, does that mean salt's valuable? Well, yeah. If an elephant's going to try to dig a hole to get it, it must have some value.
Okay.
Anyway, I may have wasted your time on that one.
No, not really. Okay. Okay, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You cannot live without salt. It's impossible. When they take salt out of a human's diet, they just languish. I can just about guarantee if somebody has a lab test and it shows their sodium levels are low, you ask them, let's go run 3 miles. And they say, no, maybe I'll just stay here in the chair. But it's really hard to be physically strong without salt. I think I grew up in the day that when we had football practice or track, we were given salt tablets. Of course, I think it was like last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, the woman told me that her mama gave her sulfur tablets to prevent chiggers and mosquitoes and every bug in the universe from eating her when she would run and play during the summertime. See, God's designed all these things to protect us, and you're the salt of the earth. You need salt. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's about, let's just say, almost 7 minutes left, give or take. No, I'm wrong about that. Eight and a half, something like that. Good morning. Thanks for your phone call.
Wow, good morning. I didn't think I'd ever get there.
Oh, listen, man, I pushed that button. When I knew it was you, I pushed it real fast.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, my wife had a root canal a long time ago on one of her front teeth, and it seems to be giving her trouble again.
Boy.
Gets a little bit pussy sometimes. And we're wondering if you had any ideas.
Well, at the very least, you're going to have to go to the dentist to get that checked out, because there's, in my mind, that's the last thing that I want for your wonderful wife, is to have a chronic low-grade infection. If the pus is coming out, then your body's trying to dump the toxic waste as quick as possible. But I would just encourage you, take that pretty seriously. And the dentist can give you many, many options. And it's not going to hurt to call, you know, before you go and say, she's got an old root canal, there's pus coming out of it. What are some of the options that we have if we come in? And so he'll give those to you. But I do think you need to take that pretty seriously, because there's not many things that can wreck a human being like a root canal with an infection.
Yeah, right.
But in the meantime, can I give you some ideas until you can get there?
Sure.
If if she took like a good tablespoon or two. See, I can hear her. She doesn't feel that bad. She's squealing like a little 3-year-old running around. She's healthy.
2-year-old, actually.
But what'd you say?
She's a 2-year-old.
Well, you know, I missed it by a couple of years.
That's not bad.
Okay. Was that your wife laughing just then? But if there's a technique called oil pulling, where you either use coconut or olive or sesame seed oil,
right.
And she has been doing that?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Does it look almost kind of foamy and bubbly after she spits it out?
Oh, I haven't paid attention, actually.
Oh.
Asked her if she noticed.
Well, and the other thing that I would have her do in the meantime is just take a couple of drops of olive oil and just rub all over the tooth and the gum and massage that area. Now, one thing I've always been a fan of when there's pus coming out of a tooth is supporting the immune system with what are called thymus proteins or thymus extracts. And usually that comes from a calf source. So the largest gland of the immune system is the thymus gland. And it will really help upregulate this and help her greatly. Sometimes I get a really good result just by swishing and rinsing the mouth with an alcohol-based Echinacea and Golden Seal.
Okay. All right.
And so I hope it works out, but I think she's going to have to go to the dentist, buddy.
Yeah, so if I still have to take x-rays and all that, or?
Well, I don't know. I think if you just call and say, what are my options, and they can take a look at it, but I can just about guarantee you they're going to want to take a picture of that. So what they can do is they can look at the bone underneath, and the value of the x-ray is they can tell us if maybe there's just a touch of infection in the jawbone itself. Is this an upper or a lower jaw?
Upper.
Upper. Well, I can almost guarantee you they're going to want to take an x-ray.
Yeah.
But I know. It won't hurt to call around, though.
Okay. Yep.
I wish you the best. No, go ahead.
If I still have a minute, yeah. Whenever my, like right now I'm standing outside in the cold and my sinuses are totally blocked. Seems like last winter, especially all winter long, I had I probably averaged about 30% sinus use.
Only 30? Goodness.
Yeah, maybe. Sometimes they're both blocked, sometimes one's working and the other's blocked, but it's quite the difference.
You know, one thing, I was talking to a gentleman just this last week who was saying, dude, I can't breathe. It's allergies. I'm miserable all the time. Now, yes. I think I said the same thing to him about 7 times before he got it, and I'm sort of joking as I say that, but I told him 7 different times over 7 different phone calls Well, but this is what he did. He said, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm only going to eat vegetables and meat. I'm going to give up all grain. I'm not going to have any sugar. And I think I had him take a little bit of sulfur also, like MSM. And what happened was he acted like it was a novel thought. When he called me, he says, you're not going to believe this. After 5 days of no sugar, my sinuses are the clearest they've ever been like in 5 years. And I'm thinking to myself, how many times did I have to tell him this? but he focused mainly on eating meat, which in philosophically, not everybody's going to agree with this, but what it represents is it's fat and protein. There's no carbs in it.
Uh-huh.
And you can build a case that sometimes sinus problems that persist, there may be a low-grade infection in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And so one thing that meat does for you, if you were to eat like a T-bone steak or to eat some fish fillets or something, it usually, or eggs, it may fill you up and you might be satisfied, because the longer you go in between snacking, the more your body cleans everything. It's called autophagy. The more you get rid of infections. And so if you snack all the time, it's kind of hard to overcome sinus problems.
Yeah, I don't snack much, ever. Really?
Well, what do you think about the idea of not eating any starches or any grains or any sugar and just kind of focus mainly on meat with maybe a little bit of vegetable?
That'd be fine. I did that last fall for about 2 months because I was trying to get rid of a what may have been some sort of yeast infection. I'm not sure. But
Did it work?
Ash. It did, almost completely, yep.
But your the sinus issues kind of... Now, the home that you live in, does it have any issues with moisture or mold, anything like that?
Well, yeah, it definitely did. In fact, we renovated this summer.
You stirred everything up, didn't you?
Yeah, but we got it all out, and everything's fresh now, so it should be...
Well, one thing that you may consider, there's a website called eBay. You've probably never heard of that because it's just a very small, teeny tiny website that nobody ever goes to. But if you were to get on eBay and type in ozone, ionizer, air purifier, UV bulb, you know, ultraviolet, you'd probably come up with a product that you could probably get for about $80. 20 years ago, they were selling these for $1,500. But they work like a champ for clearing all the mold out of the air.
Yeah, I think we have one of those, actually, that has the UV and all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know when you turn it on because you can kind of smell the difference in the air.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you can always try
taking Vicks Vapor Rub and rubbing it inside of each nostril to see if that gives you some relief.
Okay. What do you think about the salt inhaler?
I think it's worth a shot. I mean, I've seen those on eBay for like $6.15. You just shake the salt up and breathe it in deep in your lungs and blow it out through your nose. I meant the air. That didn't sound right. Yeah, those little Himalayan salt inhalers are great.
I've heard you recommend brewer's yeast a whole lot. Does it matter whether it's grown on beet molasses or beer or?
Oh, in your case, it has to be beer, definitely. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
But if you use either nutritional yeast or brewer's yeast, you'll tell me if it gives your... And see, that's I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one way that you can strengthen your immune system right there, just by incorporating yeast, which is kind of a fungus.
Yeah. Would that, if I took too much of that, could it cause a yeast infection?
No.
Okay, good.
Not at all.
Did you mean if
you wash it down with beer? Yes, it would.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't do that. Oh, okay, that's good to know.
All right, well, thanks for your phone call, buddy.
All right.
Have a good day, man. Bye.
Bye.
All right, you're listening to Health Essentials on KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyre, Longview.